Kia ora, I'm Rochelle Stewart-Allen.
And I'm Tui Hana Oihia.
And welcome to the Tātou Tātou podcast, kaitiaki kōrero about wellbeing and hauora. Welcome, Tony. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Kia ora, my name is Tony Hillua. I'm the CEO of I Am Māngere. It's a community-led trust and relatively new. I've basically come from a background of 20 years of holistic health myself, where I've provided corporate wellbeing services. So this is actually a bit of a topic.
Close to your heart.
Yeah, obviously. It is. It is actually. And I was probably going to mention a little bit later on, but the word hauora or wellbeing has been used long before it started to become a bit of a topic. So yeah, I'm really, really grateful for being here. So yeah, now I'm in the community space now.
Whoop, whoop.
Yeah, and I'm loving it. I think my 20 years of being in the corporate sector, doing wellbeing was leading me up to this.
And what differences do you notice from being in the corporate and being in the community sector in this space?
I think definitely the differences has been with the corporate sector, I guess it's like quite sterile, like it's part of the culture now. It is very much you've got an HR team to look after wellbeing. And I think what I was going to say with the difference was with corporate sector, you end up having volunteers or people of passion that join the entity rather than being the corporate sector where you very much choose who joins your team. And so the whole wellbeing side of it is very, very different. I think with the wellbeing in the corporate, it's quite isolated. It's very much identified. You're sent to the HR team and it's all done behind closed doors, where the wellbeing with community sector, when one of your team members is down or there's something on, it ripples throughout the whole team because you pretty much have come into a family environment. That was the main difference that I've really seen, especially being in a very similar position in both corporate and the wellbeing sectors. That was the one that stood out the most.
And I really pick up on your point about talking about volunteers coming in to the community sector, and you don't necessarily choose those, whereas when you're recruiting in corporate paid roles, you have that kind of ability to pick and choose who you might bring in. And absolutely as well, your point picking up about a small team, it's huge, right? So any sort of challenges, like you're working as a collective. So what are some of the things that you have seen across your time in the community sector, some of the hauora challenges, and also could be wins as well, positives?
Yeah, I think the challenges have, and I think it's probably in general, everybody that you might have spoken to has been about the lack of resources available to community sector groups. And that's not just because of the size, it is just because it's so diverse on who comes into your entity. For our group, you know, we work with a lot of kaimahi who are lived experience. We're really like a second opportunity for them to have some sort of employment opportunity or actually being involved with any kind of mahi. So to be able to really just be really flexible and provide a massive wraparound to that one particular individual that may have quite a big basket of things. I say basket because that's what's made them who they are. But then to be able to give that hauora support, that has been super challenging. And then also, how can we all together be part of this journey for that person, but then also make sure it doesn't trigger somebody else? That's been really difficult. But the wins is because we're so flexible and we can think outside the box quite a bit. So, you know, hauora could just mean school holidays, thinking about how they're going to come to work. School holidays are coming up, right? So we go, great, let's think about it. For our kaimahi to bring their kids to work, let's change the mahi we're doing. Why don't we do trips outside that allows the kids to be part of? Or let's start that fishing event that we wanted for the whole community, make it in the school holidays so that our team can bring their children. That's being flexible. That's being able to be in that community sector where we aren't kind of got the red tape around us like corporates.
I love that, because I love that idea that rather than you have to come to work and leave the rest of your life at the door, which can be often in a corporate environment, instead you come and bring your whole person to the mahi, and that includes the fact that you have whānau, you have tamariki coming, and then creating an environment they can also be part of that, of that work that you're doing.
I've been really mindful of that too, you know, like the whole, who said coming to work at 8 o'clock in the morning is the time you're supposed to start work, or even to eat lunch at midday, or to finish at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock? I mean, who set those rules? Who set the rules for us to go to sleep at 10 o'clock? If you really do want to go back to hauora, you do have to go back to Maramataka, or how your environment, our suburb Māngere, is quite different to Avondale, right? So what does that mean? What works for us? Have I got staff who have got children? Then why don't we make start time 9 o'clock or 9:30? Take that pressure off that person. So again, you've taken away that element of anxiety that you know parents or those that we bring as kaimahi. So without them having to ask you, why don't we just do it ourselves? So our start time is around about 9:30. Finish time is roughly about 2:30, 3 o'clock. If you can stay later because of, they will stay. Your lunch time is when you're hungry. You know, and it's...
Who heard of such a thing?
I know, right? How dare we? But I think that's haora. That's looking after well-being and changing the system. It's a, you know, very colonised thing about going to school 9 to 3, and it's good for structure, but for sometimes just changing a little bit makes a huge difference.
And have your kaimahi then fed back to you about the difference that that's made for them?
We've had quite a bit of feedback, especially probably the ones that have had a hard time trying to find employment. Those rules, guidelines and restrictions on I need to be here this time, and I have to perform. Coming to us, it's been a lot less stressful, a lot less anxiety driven, that they've actually been able to flourish in what they actually have always wanted to do. We've still got a lot of work. You know, it's not easy, but I think if you've got good leaders and a great team, you can see that a mile away and you just know what to do and adapt and be really flexible. We change every day, really, but you have to be for a community sector.
And because effectively you're kind of in the startup mode as well, right? Maybe you could talk a little bit more about the kaupapa of Iron Mangere. That would be great.
Yeah, so what we did is the people who formed Iron Mangere, I'll give a little bit of context behind it of why we formed ourselves and when we did. So we've all come from backgrounds of either holistic health, community work, corporate work. I picked up a contract to help come up with holistic solutions for our vulnerables that occupy Mangere Town Centre. I just felt that was an absolute synergy to what I was doing in the corporate sector. And of course, being 5 minutes away from home, I was like, oh man, this is like my dream job. So that 1 year turned into 6. But during that time, I saw gaps. And then obviously COVID hit. And what we found was with every entity that always provided that support network for our vulnerables had to shut shop. So obviously we knew community had to step up. However, though, with that, a lot of these community groups, church groups, sports groups, mums, dads, nanas, didn't have any financial backing or didn't have marquees, didn't have a kitchen to access. So we went, you know what, we need that entity. Now that can actually probably umbrella hold funds and work as a collective, you know, so that was really why Iron Mangere formed, was the birth of COVID, really. But we had been working on that concept for about 3 years. So the space we're in now is, yes, we provide our small champions and our small community groups with governance support, financial or funding application support. We teach them how to stand on their own 2 feet so that they can continue their mahi without worrying about any of that. We are community connectors first and foremost. We've always been that in the community by connecting people to anything. If you're new to our area, if they're asking where's the local sports club, you can basically go and take them and introduce them to everybody they need to know. And we've really just found our feet in being quite trusted community advocates, because I think we're so connected that we're now able to take our community's voices to stakeholder decision-making tables and make sure they're really listening to the community, and then vice versa, making sure stakeholders or government entities or any of those groups, their messaging or their help and services really reaches the community. So that's Iron Mangere in a nutshell, really, and whatever the community wants or whatever they feel the gap is, we try and make it happen in any way we can.
Yeah, Rawe, that's fantastic. Can you talk a little bit about the weather events? I mean, when I saw on the TV as things were unfolding and I saw Mangere Town Centre in flood, and I really thought about you and the team and wondered, you know, the impacts just for you as a team, then the mahi that you're doing.
Yeah, so with Iron Mangere, because we also have neighbourhood support part of a project that we support and do, civil emergencies or obviously COVID, the pandemic, is something that we kind of switch our mahi to. So we go from normal work to a response team. With the floods, you know what, that caught everybody out, everybody in Auckland and nationwide, really. So I think the only time I really realised it had the impact that it did was probably about 2 hours into it when we started seeing videos from our own team members videoing their front lawns and their cars floating. And at first it was a little funny because everyone was jumping in the water and it was something quite new. Then when it did sink in, you know what, this rain's not stopping, and actually now it's going down the rest of the street, it's going to my neighbours, that was where that element of, okay, now we've got to switch into this mode, and we all did. So first and foremost, our team went and uffed our team and your neighbours. First thing you do, check on your neighbours, check on the ones that you love, check on the ones that know are vulnerable, check on your own team. We started door knocking the day after, and that was pretty much just the same thing as what you would do with your own whānau. You'll go over, check on them, how are you, what's the house like, what's needed. That ended up just going out to all the streets. We obviously, because we know our community very well, we knew what areas would have likely been flooded, so we kind of went straight out there. From there, it just rolled into a local response project, I guess. We've definitely joined forces with all the other small groups that we knew of that were doing door knocks and wellbeing checks. And I think with our experience, we just kind of pulled everybody together just to coordinate ourselves better, so we're a bit more effective, so we didn't burn out. And that's how we kind of took a bit of a lead role in it again. We realised that was our position. We were going to be out on the beat, checking in on everybody, feeding that intel back into the evac emergency centre that had eventually formed. We worked very well with that. And then once things kind of died down a little bit, then we obviously realised there was a cleaning need. That meant helping whānau move their flooded, damaged items from the house just to outside first. That was the first step. That's all we thought was going to be needed. But then we realised actually they couldn't get it out to the curbside, and then we needed to get that curbside rubbish to the tip because then a cyclone was coming. So it was, and that's when we went full-blown with the evac centre and had a separate subgroup, which was the cleaning mahi that we did. And through that, oh man, we had over 1,000 volunteers. That was from schools, from churches, from everywhere. They just came and helped every single day. Student Volunteer Army helped. Everybody you can think of that could help came out. And we were able to remove every single, almost every single home of their rubbish before the cyclone. And there was with another amazing group that were contracted to help. And they brought their trucks along. But, you know, on the list, there was no Mangere streets. And he's a Mangere boy. And he said, why is there no streets for me to clear from this contracted list? And we were like, we have no idea. We've got about 15 that we still need done. He goes, that's it. I'm bringing my team in. But that's fantastic. That power of working together. Eh?
Yeah. Yeah. And how did you find, for you personally, some quiet space, some downtime amongst that? Because that's an intense period.
Yeah. I don't think we actually could. I think the only time you had downtime and a quiet time was when you were asleep.
And yeah.
I'll be really honest with that. No, you couldn't really. Yeah. I think that keep listening to rainfall, you're instantly awake. I'm very mindful that my family is also involved with the mahi we do, so we were all involved with it. I think what keeps you going, though, is knowing you've got a good system, you know what you're doing the next day, which kind of allows you not to panic. And I think that's why we do very well in the response space, is we're very well organised, we know what we're doing the next day, and that does give you some element of being able to relax a bit, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So effectively, rather than planning out, you're like, right, okay, in the next day, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah, pretty much. I think it had to go by day because it changed every single day, and the need changed as well. So us from going from welfare checks to cleaning homes to then all of a sudden we now have to remove jib from the walls, or actually that's too much work from volunteers, so it all had to change within 24 hours. We went, no, that's actually not our role now, it has to go to another organisation that's fit for that purpose. However, we can go and deliver flyers that allows our community to understand what black mould is. So again, we had to adapt to that. We had to create flyers within a short time. I think we turned it over in a week. And then we're able to deliver them out. So, yeah, you do have to, as a 24-hour kind of timeline, really.
Super intense, and really, you know, pat you and the team on the back, because it's not easy mahi on top of the other work that you're doing. You know, it's incredibly intense time. I'm sure emotions are really high in the community as well, because it was so personal for everybody. How did you, those other groups that you were connected with, did you already have those relationships in place?
Yeah, we did, luckily, and it was through COVID. But again, I think that's when we took that lead of making sure that we spoke to all of our groups that always do something, whether it's a response or if it's a particular project. We tend to know what groups put their hands up to do that. Again, and it's not something that we stopped during COVID. We've always kept each other up to date with what services are we doing now. And that really did help with this particular event because we all knew each other. We kind of knew our lanes. And it's very important with the community sector, right? Staying in your lanes. But we knew sharing resources was the key to make this one work extremely efficient. And yeah, you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat. We had teams, you know, teams that lost members during the flood response because it was too much for them. They just had to tap out. Knowing that your team members who still had their homes flooded and had to really, they just decided, look, I've really got to look after my own family. And we were just like, you go for it because that is exactly what you've got to do. And that's what we're talking about. The well-being on while you're doing mahi like this, you have to listen to every single person and you've got to watch the signs as well. I went through it, you know, me and my other kind of 2IC, we went for it at one bit, but everybody did. We just knew, cool, you do this thing, I'll do this thing, and we'll just keep going because to be honest, we know the goal was to look after everybody. Right now, we're good. Do your thing, I'll do my thing, and we'll see you at the other end for the better.
And how? Yeah. What are some of the things that you do personally for your own hauora?
For me, it's really, really depends on what I'm needing. I'm very in tune to what it is that I need, and that could be something as simple as getting home, going, having a shower, jumping into PJs, getting into bed straight away. And I don't care if that was 3:30 in the afternoon and then you get to cuddle your kids.
I feel you.
Yeah.
I feel you.
Like, to me, that is, oh, I could do that every day. Mm. Versus, yeah, actually, you know what? Need to treat myself and my family. We'll go out for something, for like a dinner, go try something new, you know, things like that. Mm. I'm not probably one or in a financial position to be able to go away to like Vararo, to Niue or somewhere like, you know, just to really get off the grid. But things to get out into, a garden. Also, I feel just with my holistic background, if I'm close to doing something that's getting your feet in the sand, in the dirt, in the grass, pulling some weeds, making a normal, I don't care, cooking, that's me. And luckily my family loves to do that too, which is a bonus. So we get to do it together.
Yeah, nice. Because I think that power of getting your hands in the dirt, right, and just stepping away from all the pressures and just, you know, have that real grounding sense of your feet on the grass, your hands in the dirt, whatever it is.
And it's fishing. You know, it's exactly the same sort of thing, but it's fishing as well. You know, if I go out fishing, whether it's off the wharf or the boat, man, that those 2 hours or 3 hours that you're out there, I've just, the first time ever, I've never thought about work. And it's like, those are the things that I love to do. So going out and eating or cooking or getting stuck in the garden or doing a umu, you know, those are the things when you're not thinking about the things that you've been thinking about for the last 48 hours. That's great for the soul.
I think it's so easy to get buried in that thinking space, right? And just be really fixated on that. You know, even if you're stepping away from doing the mahi, your brain is still in that place, still at work.
And I think that's very hard for those who do lead corporate or community entities. Like, I'll have to admit, sometimes if I'm not thinking or finding solutions, that's me. It's in me. I don't know why. For some people, they just think that's dreadful. But for me, I have to have some element of still thinking. So I do have to find things that allow me to completely switch off. But then it doesn't help. I'll probably go home and then the thinking starts happening again. But that's me. And I think that's I love that. You know, without that, I probably would be a mess if I didn't have something to try and figure a solution for.
Yes.
I'm afraid.
Well, I think we all carry, you know, traits and that there's the good and bad in those traits, right? Should they go one side too far rather than somewhere kind of in that middle and within that bell curve, then, you know, it can be too much. But But there are things that drive us, and I think passion is one of the things, and that's obvious with you as well, Tony, is like the passion to do the mahi that you're doing is a driver. But then also it's the balancing out of that passion where sometimes the sacrifice of that is at the sacrifice of your own well-being.
Yeah, and I've been really mindful of that for a long, long time, especially during the corporate. So finding that work-life balance, I'm still learning that. I've gotten a lot better. Funny enough, being in the community sector, but I think that's because I've been able to go, those are my hours. And I think the pressure of that nobody is there to go, well, actually, no, because that's what your business said. This is what our community group has said. And if we don't work weekends or if we don't work after this hour, we can be flexible, but that pressure's taken off you. And I think I've been able to find that, which has been awesome. Still a lot of work, though, but you're getting there. At least you can acknowledge it.
I know we've spoken about, you know, how you look after your haora, and you've spoken about the floods. Really interested to know, and it's interesting because we've been talking to many community leaders, and, you know, we have high empathy. We do loads of acts of service to others. So it's good to hear that, you know, you've been speaking about how you do act of service unto self, kuo. But really fascinated with, what do you think some of the well-being needs of the community are in South Auckland? Because I think we have a lot of people that think they know about South Auckland, think they know what they need. But what do you feel that they really need for their well-being in South Auckland?
And I'll talk about our entity, about just exactly that, because that's who we service, as our most vulnerable and our community. And I think for us, we just need people that will just genuinely sit and just listen to them and give them safe spaces to be able to do that. And I know everyone keeps saying, but there's so many services out there that help you. And we're like, cool, we know that, but why do they keep coming back to us? And it's because we've provided a safe space for them to just sit. Doesn't even need to be talking. Let them sit and have a space where they are warm, comfortable, know they're welcomed, by the way, that's another level, and then when they want to finally talk, be there to do it with them. I know it sounds really simple, but that is what our community's needing.
Sometimes it's not brain science, though, right?
Yeah. So everyone keeps thinking food parcels. It's the tangible stuff, and they've just absolutely powered on, love it. They do need that, but like I said, come back, what do they actually need? Mama just needs somebody to sit and talk to. Nana, with all the grandchildren, just needs somewhere to be able to take all the moko, but for her to be able to sit, have a coffee, and then just talk to another person who could be in the same position or could just go, you're doing a beautiful job, have the week off, because we know you're sitting in conferences with the court trying to fight for your grandchildren.
Yeah, because we talked about, in another podcast, we talked about, you know, the data and how everyone likes to have this data. The more I listen to our Māori and PI community, the more I understand that the greatest data is actually through stories. It's Western constructs that tell us that data is this thing, but through our own whakapapa, you know, that's how we know the stories of, say, our ancestors. Sometimes it is the really simple things that we need to do.
It is, just what you're saying about us, our stories through our ancestors, they gave us the solutions as well and the stories. Yeah. You know, and I think that's why I said just listen, because actually, you know, when someone tells you what their story, they're actually telling you what they need. And if you have the ability to just sit and listen and then just go, my gosh, I know exactly what they need. That's why I say our entity, we're community connectors, because we allow them to talk and then we go, I'm going to connect you to someone who I think would be the right person for you or the right entity. I think that's why community sector entities love the funding. We need the funding, but how to report on it is always stats driven, KPIs, and we sit there going, I don't want to ask that whānau how many people they've got in their house for me to enable you to have a food box. But can I just ask your story of why you're here? And they'll just tell you everything. And I go, that's exactly what I'm needing. So we're really wanting a narrative report really half the time. It's very lucky we've got things like podcasts now and social media, because for us, we do reels where we create what the event was. And it could have been, we're giving out food boxes, but really it was to show how many people did come out and how many people do need help, and but show it in a beautiful way.
And it's outside the numbers, right?
Outside it,
the like
numbers.
The numbers are just like so, they just don't actually capture
for
the
us
story.
To exactly say how many people walk through my our doors at Aia Māngere on a daily basis. I could not tell you. But how many did we write down? Probably only five, you know, for stats purposes. And so for me, I does break my heart because it, one, doesn't show how amazing our team is or our volunteers are. Because that one conversation that one person had outside our front door that only lasted 2 seconds, that will still help. Versus what we have to show is written reports if we need to. Oh, it breaks my heart.
I think that's a real obstacle to community groups to actually seek funding. Because first of all, they don't want to fill out the freaking 10-page forms that you've got to fill out with all the this and the that and the that and the this. And then they also don't want to give you a report that's 10 pages long.
Yep.
You know? Because I mean, that's one reason why I personally have never sought funding. The reason why is because I don't want to do a 10-page report, right?
And that's one of the things we've been working with at Hui is, really talking to funders about their ability to just do video applications, video reporting. You know, because most people have a phone now. It doesn't have to be super high res, right? But you can just go around, you can say, you know, you can ask people stories, you can show spaces, you can show events, you can see what's happening.
Because that reporting is such a Western way of doing things.
Yeah, absolutely.
It actually can re-trigger, can have all sorts of triggers for many people, although that word's been bandied around so much lately.
But also you've got to have writing skills and not just writing skills, but you have to write it in a special way that people need, you know, government needs or funders need. And it's not the average person writes like that either.
No.
Yeah.
You know, those videos, those reels, those, thank goodness for social media, that's kind of where, and that's where the real gold is, right? That's where the magic is.
Absolutely. And I think that's really the only reason why people do know about us still is because we don't toot our own horn. We don't have the time to do that, but also that's not what we're about. You know, you get out there, do the mahi. But I think with Aia Māngere, we realised that a lot of our small groups didn't also do it. So they got missed out a lot in acknowledgement or funding or just something simple as accessing free first aid courses, you know. So we go out and try and showcase what our community does do and who's important and who shouldn't be left behind. Just kind of making sure they deserve what they get.
So you help them tell their stories.
Exactly. And then I think that's why we ended up forming Aia Māngere to start with as well, was like I said before, to help these small groups or community champions, because most of the times you're individuals, with that effort of governance, funding, admin. The list keeps going on now. It used to be just the top three, but now it's event coordination. It's connecting to another group that's got like-minded ideas and things, but that is what they're needing. They don't have the time to do these reports. It's not that they don't want to. They just don't have the time to do it. Me being in my role now, I didn't like it because I am very much a hands-on CEO, I guess. I'm a community connector. That's why I tell people I miss doing the events. I miss talking to our people because now I've got to be behind the scenes making sure a report's done or making sure HR now, you know, for a particular staff member may need something. It's that side. And I do sit there sometimes wondering, why did I leave the corporate sector well-being into the community where I'm doing exactly the same thing, but it is 10 times worse because I don't have the resources. Mm. But like I said, but we're flexible. So let's make it our way.
is it also because so many that work in this space, it's not about pūtea?
Yeah.
Right? It's not about earning the 200K, whatever. It's about giving back, right? It's about reciprocity.
Love.
It's about aroha mai. Aroha mai, aroha atu. But then actually, is it even that? Because you don't actually expect anything in return.
You do respect something in return, but it's not usually something in hand. You see it because you see that person with a smile.
Yeah.
That is what we're wanting. It's that we did it for them, you know. So when we say it's not about pūtea, it's not. And I think that's why we saw that as Aia Māngere was a lot of these groups, it wasn't the funding. It was they would do it anyway. They were doing it anyway. But could we help them with a marquee for their event?
Yes.
Could we help them with tables or a chair or if we got a community mobile hub, which we got for the community to use at their events, take their services out, would that help them? Yes, it did. So really, it was only one entity that needed to go for that kind of funding. But to now talk about shared resources, we've been quite big advocates about us needing to start sharing services, resources, money. And, you know, for the flood response, you know, we had a really good relationship now with our response work. It was one phone call to ask for some funding, and we got it from two different funding entities, and I'm really grateful for that. However, first thing in our head was, wasn't for us, it was, what are the other groups? Who are the other groups that are out there doing the same thing? Hey, do you need this? What? Well, oh, yeah, man, our transit van is, like, pumping. We're like, great, here, do what you need to do with it. That's what we're about. We've just got to share the resources because these small groups won't ever go for it still.
Well, that's a true sense of tato tato. You, me,
all of us.
A collective way of thinking, being and doing.
Right? We.
Which is actually very much a Te Ao Māori perspective. It's a PI perspective, you know, our Pacifica whānau. In fact, many cultures have that kind of point of view. Man, it's been a pleasure getting to know you.
Thank you.
I feel like we could talk some more.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being a guest here today.
You're welcome. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Tato Tato, a podcast about kaitiaki kōrero and our wellbeing haora. You can find us online at huie.org.nz/tato tato. That's huie.org.nz/tato tato. You can find me online, Rochelle Stewart Allen, at theNGOcoach.com.
Oh, and you can find Tuihana Oi here at www.wewellbeing.co.nz. Or check out I Am Tuihana on Instagram. Kia ora.
Tato Tato is brought to you by Huie Community Aotearoa, Volunteering New Zealand, Centre for Social Impact, and Wu Wellbeing.